Thank you very much.
Our next case is Leonard B. U.
I have these masks here.
I don't know what they want to hear.
The case, the way it gets bad, you can use one.
I'll leave them there if somebody wants to. Mr. Marsden?
May it please the court, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal, if I may.
You may.
This appeal concerns the proper scope of a patent for an improvement to one of the greatest inventions in anesthesia since anesthetic gases in the 1840s. The pioneer invention to which I refer is the laryngeal mask airway. It is a medical device for the passage of anesthetic gases in air to a patient undergoing general anesthesia or in an emergency situation. It's been used safely more than 200 million times. It's been subject to more than 3,000 clinical papers, and it represents
Does the word backplate have an ordinary meaning to one of skill in the art?
It has a plain meaning to one of skill in the art of basically being a back and a plate. The back of the device and a plate
But that doesn't the specification make clear that it has a tube joint?
It does not, Your Honor.
It uses the word tube joint all over the specification, and in fact your claims originally had a tube joint in it.
The present invention language actually uses the word attach. It does not require a tube joint or any particular method of attachment between an airway tube and the backplate, which the district, district court construed in claim construction, and which is not in dispute on this appeal.
But the specification of column 6 says the backplate has a spoon shape, including a bowl and an external tube joint, and further down, extending through the tube joint. Tube joint is all over the specification.
It absolutely is, Your Honor, and I'll make the issue more difficult for me. It's repeated numerous times, and the figures all show backplates with tube joints. And however, as you pointed out, column 6 is in the detailed description of the invention. It's talking about particular embodiments, and circuit precedent is quite clear that mere repetition.
Are there other embodiments disclosed that don't have tube joints?
There are two things on that. Number one, there's a present invention language, which is in the summary of the invention, the first paragraph. Summary of the invention, second paragraph. I'm looking at JA 142, the second paragraph. The paragraph begins, in accordance with the invention, referring to the present invention, there is provided a laryngeal mask airway device comprising a flexible airway tube and a mask attached to one end of the airway tube. So the present invention has an attachment, but no.
Counsel, that doesn't even mention a backplate anywhere, and your claims clearly cover a backplate, so I don't see how
the mask structure, Your Honor, means typically either the backplate or the backplate with the cuff. So if I understand you have samples of the physical exhibits, but the airway tube is attached to the backplate. That's what it's attached
Your
to.
Claims cover a backplate. The paragraph you're pointing to do not define the word backplate in any way. Yet, the very next section, also in the summary of the invention, column 2, does in fact talk about column 2, line 32. It does say, in accordance with the preferred aspect of the invention, it talks about the backplate, but then it goes on to explain the tube joint. I assume that you'll say that that's, again, also just the preferred embodiment somehow, but I don't see anywhere where a backplate is discussed. And without mention of a tube joint, not just a backplate, you know, said to exist without a tube joint, but I don't see anywhere, every single place where the backplate is mentioned in this patent, whether it's in the summary of the invention, or the detailed descriptions, or in the figures, or elsewhere, it's always discussed to have this joint. Yes?
You're absolutely right that all the preferred embodiments mention backplates with tube joints.
But I don't see any disclosure in the summary, the background, anywhere of something without a tube joint.
Well, Your Honor, there are two things. Number one, in the summary of invention, the present invention language talks about attachment. And the second thing I'll add, which is also, I think, equally
the
important.
Present invention, what are you referring to, the present invention?
On J142.
We're on the patent, column one, line?
Column one, the line 58. The attached language. That's talking about attaching a flexible airway to the mat. That mask structure is the backplate.
That's column one, line 64, isn't it? The mask structure or backplate.
Yes. And Your Honor, you're absolutely right in the portion you were citing, as you mentioned, that is a preferred aspect of the invention, and that was talking about the indentation invention, which is one of four inventions in this patent. There are continuation patents discussing other inventions, but that's not this one.
But what you're saying, we see this all the time, where the drafter of the patent uses the word preferred and says, that means my invention isn't limited to that embodiment, but doesn't disclose anything else.
Well, but
so preferred, essentially, when you look at the whole spec, means only.
Well, but not in this specification, because the present invention language is broader. And if I might mention, the other thing that should remove any doubt is the prosecution history.
Counsel, but it says in the preferred aspect, the mass structure or backplate. But that doesn't help us to define what the word backplate means. It's the mass structure or backplate, but we still have to figure out, well, what does that entail?
Right, in the district court.
And I didn't see any evidence presented by you in the form of expert testimony or otherwise, not even a dictionary. And in fact, when I went online, the only definition of backplate had to do with scuba diving gear, so it's clearly not relevant to this technology. So I don't see any evidence that would suggest the word backplate has a common meaning, and the only meaning I get out of the context of this patent is something with a tube joint. So where am I going wrong? I mean, didn't you have an obligation, if there's some plain meaning that it doesn't include a tube joint, to offer something to establish that?
Well, we
you were going to tell us about the prosecution history, which is pretty enlightening here.
Would you go
ahead and address that?
Yeah, the prosecution history, if there's any doubt about whether backplate must include a tube joint, it's, I think, resolved by the inventor's removal of tube joint during the prosecution history as Sage products.
And he did that because the cuff reinforcement invention doesn't require a tube joint, right?
Exactly right.
But you had tube joints because that was part of earlier inventions, which you had to disclaim because of a requirement imposed on you by the Patent Office. Is that right?
Exactly right, Your Honor. The Patent Office required us to choose.
So the reason you'd have tube joint all the way through is because you were claiming that earlier, weren't you?
Absolutely, Your Honor. In the very
and then they forced you to narrow your invention. You couldn't claim four. You could only claim one of the inventions. You chose the cuff reinforcement, and that doesn't require a tube joint.
Absolutely right. So prosecution history, the attached language, and the one other third thing I would offer in response is what Phillips stated en banc is you start first and substantial guidance is provided by the language of the claims.
In fact, the claims define the invention, not the specification, which describes the enabling embodiments, right?
Absolutely right. And what's telling here is again, I won't cite the JA, but it's 146, column 10 of the patent, claim 1, recites a laryngeal mask airway device comprising, and there are only two things, it's a backplate and an inflatable cuff. There's no airway tube that's listed, so there's nothing that needs to be joined together.
Please remind me, I don't remember exactly where it is, but I did look at the prosecution history, and I may be misrecollecting this, so correct me if I am. I thought there was a restriction requirement imposed And then much later in time, you eliminated the tube joint limitation. I didn't think that it was in direct response to the restriction requirement, but I might be wrong. So I want you to correct my recollection of the prosecution history, because I don't have it marked here, and so I don't remember which page it's on. And well, in fact, this isn't even it.
Well, Judge Moore, you're absolutely right that there is a length of time between the patent application and the issuance. I believe the patent was applied for in 1999, and it was issued in early 2007. The inventor was required to choose. The initial choice the inventor made was to go with a different invention, the indentation invention. Then you have all the tube joint issues. Then the inventor went with another version of the cuff reinforcement invention, and finally went with what is currently issued as claims 1 through 6. But the general point is absolutely correct, and as Judge Rader mentioned, a choice was required to be made. The initial citation of tube joint as being a limitation or part of the backplate was only in connection with the indentation invention. The passage that you quoted about the preferred aspect of the invention, and that was disclaimed, and the tube joint was removed. The claims were broadened to the full extent of the present invention.
Did any action by the examiner prompt the removal of the tube joint limitation?
Well, indirectly, yes, because ultimately when the inventor decided to go with an invention other than the indentation invention, the tube joint was not relevant. That's why the present invention language says attach. The invention here is a reinforcement of the cuff. That's the leading edge, the laryngeal mask. That invention is entirely agnostic as to how the backplate or mask is attached to the airway tube. It just doesn't matter. The point is to reinforce the leading edge so that it doesn't fold over on insertion. You could have it attached with integral molding, as the accused devices do, with heat fusion, with a sleeve joint, butt joint, anything.
What about the written description argument? The patent is invalidated for a failure of written description?
Yes, that is one of the two bases in the judgment. And in our view, a complete written description of the claimed invention is provided in column 8 of the patent, beginning on line 9. The written description discloses the thickening, what to thicken, and where to thicken, precisely what is claimed in independent claim 1. And we can compare. The written description states, and I quote, "The distal rib 105A may be effectively constituted by a thickening of the posterior wall of the distal region 60A of the inflatable main cuff 55A. By comparison, independent claim 1 tracks the language almost exactly. Quote, "At least a portion of the posterior portion of a wall of the cuff in the distal region being thicker and stiffer than the other portions of the cuff." The claim very closely tracks the written description, talking about the thickening, the posterior portion of the cuff wall, and it's in the distal region. And the district court did not really disagree with that a thickened cuff wall is described. Where the district court erred was when it required the patentee to describe expressly an unconnected thickened cuff wall. But as this court has held in Cordes and Lampe, you can disclose the genus and not have to disclose included species. In this case, the genus is a thickened cuff wall, and the two species are connected and unconnected. And the species is disclosed, and the genus is disclosed, and the species need not be separately enumerated.
Mr. Marsden, you're into your rebuttal. You want to save some?
Yes, sir. Yes, Your Honor. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ms. Morrow?
Thank you, Your Honor. And with me in court today is Mr. Ole Kanka, Director of Legal Affairs and Intellectual Property from AMBU AS. First, with regard to the court's questions on the construction of backplate, there is no evidence of an ordinary meaning for backplate in the field of medical devices generally. There is also no dictionary definition of an ordinary meaning that would apply here. When we looked for a dictionary definition, we got armory and scuba diving and locksmithing as instances of backplate. So what we're left with is a situation where we do have to look to the specification to specifically understand what a backplate means. And the inventor was...
And whether it includes tube joint,
and whether
which was in the original claims and was removed.
Exactly. And with regard to the prosecution history point, Your Honor, the amendment was not made in direct response to a restriction. The amendment to remove the tube joint language was made in a set of new claims that were drafted after our client introduced its first product. So it was an attempt to define essentially a new invention based on the same specification. It was a prior version of my client's product.
What does a tube joint have to do with the cuff reinforcement invention?
Well, the claim doesn't recite just the cuff reinforcement. The claim also recites the back plate that defines a passage. It recites that the back plate provides an opening in the mask so that air can go through the cuff. And it also recites the passage and says that the passage...
But a tube joint's just a manufacturing choice, isn't it? You could have it molded as one unitary piece, or you could later attach a tube, right?
Well,
this is just manufacturing choice, which anyone of skill in the art, in fact, you probably don't even have to be of skill in the art to understand that you can attach a tube in a variety of ways, or you can just mold it at the outset with a tube.
But the passage is claimed in the claim. It says backplate defining a passage. And the second element of the claim does make clear that it includes both the opening through the mask.
But where in the claim is there a tube joint?
The claim does not reference the tube joint.
The claim says
that the back plate defines a passage. And so then we need to look to the specification to determine how the specification explains that passage. And there are specific instances I'd like to cite to the court on that. For example, at column 4, line 42 of the specification, in what the applicant calls the detailed description of the invention, not of a preferred embodiment, it says that the device establishes a freely external accessible ventilation passage via the airway port in the back plate where the airway tube connects. And it has similar language at column 6, line 34. It explains that the bowl of the back plate, and this is the passage Judge Lurie referred to, has
a back plate defining a passage. That's all the prior art, isn't it?
What it says is that it
that's all in the prior art, isn't it? This is very well known. It's a tube that brings air. That isn't very difficult.
A tube bringing air may not be very difficult. Establishing the correct passage through a laryngeal...
All of that's in the prior art, right?
...was the subject of Dr. Brain's prior patent.
Yes.
Dr. Brain wrote in here that what he was doing in the summary of invention was providing...
So anyone of skill in the art knows how to get air into a mask, right? This isn't rocket science.
But he
science.
Didn't claim a generic mask. He did not claim any
laryngeal
mask device.
No, we're looking at a reinforcement.
The improvement is just a reinforcement.
We're trying to solve the foldover problem, right? Isn't that what we're looking at?
But he elected to claim the structure, and he elected how much of the structure from his prior device to carry through into the claims. He could have made just an improvement claim to a reinforced cuff. He didn't. He made a claim to a backplate defining a passage and explained that that passage provides an opening to the larynx and a further passage to the airway. The specific way in which he designed his backplate was something that includes a tube joint to make that junction.
Well, how about in the summary of the invention?
There are other connection mechanisms.
In the summary of the invention, in the second paragraph, in accordance with the invention, there is provided, etc. It doesn't mention a tube joint there.
It does. It mentions the flexible airway tube, which is the airway tube, and a mask attached to one end of the airway tube. And so that is the attachment point. And later he explains that the way he accomplishes that attachment, described in the summary of the invention, is with this back plate, which has this integral structure with the bowl shape, the hole for the air, and the tube joint to provide the passage that is recited in the claim.
In other words, you're saying column 1, lines 56, etc., is only a broad statement of the invention, not including all aspects of it.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Doesn't specify a tube joint. The claims that define the invention don't specify a tube joint. Joint is probably so elemental that it's even not mentioned in the prior art is very important, is it?
Well, if this was not important...
You're seizing on something that has almost nothing to do with the invention to try and avoid the invention, aren't you?
No, it's vitally important to the invention that there be an opening through which air...
Air has to get
mask.
Into the mask, clearly.
Yes.
Is that something that any
Is that the invention?
Via
this
a tube.
No, he's claiming the combination of that invention with some improvements in order to try to extend his basic patent on the basic invention. He didn't need to include those other structural features. He could have dropped them. Instead, he recites the backplate and he recites the passage.
What about written description?
One brief point on the prosecution history, and then I'll move to the written description with the court's permission. He did not remove entirely the structure that requires the tube joint. What he did was say, instead of reciting a backplate with a tube joint, he recited a backplate with a passage. Given that the only thing that he teaches in his specification to form that passage is this tube joint, one would submit that he has not made such a radical broadening of his claims as the other side would suggest. And in fact, that language does not support the notion that the tube joint has been abandoned because its function is still present. And in addition, the specification is very clear on this point. With regard to the written description point, what has happened here is that we have a scenario where there are exactly two embodiments of the distal reinforcement of the cuff. Figures 1 through 9 of the patent, figure 1 is described as the device of the invention. 1 through 9 all have exactly the same device in it, which is a device where there's a physical extension from the cuff that pierces the cuff.
What about column 8, line 9 through 13, which explains that the distal rib may be effectively constituted by a thickening of the posterior wall of the distal region of the inflatable main cuff. Why isn't that adequate?
That's not adequate because it doesn't actually teach either a structure that is detached from the back plate or a structure that is formed by thickening the cuff. If you look at that section starting in column 7, it's a description from figure 10. And it explains that in this version, which starts at the bottom of column 7, the distal rib 105A of the back plate 52A is applied to the posterior surface of the distal region of the main cuff, as shown in figure 10. And so what it's doing is providing a physical abutment over the cuff that reinforces it, the cuff in that area, i.e. it's applied to the posterior surface of the cuff, it is not part of the cuff. It then explains that it has this convex surface so that it can map to the shape of the cuff. So it is a different device than the cuff and not part of a cuff thickening. When it says it effectively
but column 8 says thickening of the posterior wall of the distal region of the inflatable main cuff. That's what column 8 says.
It says the distal rib 105A may be effectively constituted by a thickening of the posterior wall of the distal region. It doesn't say that it is a thickening of the wall
They don't have to say, for written description, they just have to show the inventor possessed the invention, and why isn't it adequate that it says it may be done this way?
Because he doesn't actually ever teach the thickening of the actual cuff. If you go reading on down column 8.
He doesn't have to teach the purpose of it. All he has to do is say thickening of the posterior wall of the distal region of the inflatable main cuff. How does that not satisfy a written description of at least a portion of the posterior wall of the cuff and the distal region being thicker and stiffer than other portions? I mean, he says thickening of the wall.
So I think that there were two issues.
Almost identical language. I'm baffled.
I think there were two distinct issues addressed here. One is whether you can achieve this device without a separation. And second, whether there's any teaching in the specification of achieving this device with a thickening of the cuff. In the language that the court has just referred to, it's all with reference to the same embodiment, figure 10, where it shows only a distal extension of the back plate that neither thickens the cuff nor is made of the cuff material. If you go on
No, no, counsel, it's the sentence says the distal ridge may be effectively, and then it goes on to say thickening this portion of the cuff, and as shown, therefore, in figure 10, it goes on to say distal bulk extension. So when it says it may be, I mean, isn't it reasonable to say that this is something you may do, but not necessarily exactly what is pictured in figure 10?
Our reading of that language is that the effectively constituted is it's explaining that it acts as if it were a cuff thickening, not that it is a thickening of the cuff. And if you go down further in column 8,
now, this is a question of fact, right? I was kind of going the same place. This is a question of fact. The other side has put in extensive expert testimony that a person of skill in the art would read this and clearly see that one possesses a thickening of the mask to avoid the foldover problem. So why isn't there, at a minimum, a factual problem for you?
Well, the question is, the court is to be a gatekeeper in terms of the expert material that actually goes to a jury, and the question is whether that opinion, based on
but you can't just ignore issues of fact. You can't ignore genuine issues of fact. You have to show that there is no issue of fact in order to reach summary judgment.
Correct, Your Honor. And with regard to that, we would submit that a portion of a sentence fragment is not enough to base an opinion on that a reasonable jury could rely on with regard to this. There have been a number
but they didn't have that. They had an expert witness who substantiated that one of skill in the art would find this easy. And frankly, I find it easy, and I'm not even of skill in the art. I'm trying to figure out what the disconnect is.
There is a limit, Your Honor, with regard to expert testimony. An expert could come in and say the specification says that the tube joint is made of blue cheese, and obviously the court would not...
He didn't say that. He said it was a thickening and that it's a cuff reinforcement invention, and that one of skill in the art would not only understand that they possessed it, they'd know how to do it. It was fully enabled.
He did, but he was creating a third embodiment from a patent that says it has only two embodiments from a sentence fragment.
Where does the patent say we only have two embodiments?
In the description of the drawings, it indicates that there
are... That's a description of the drawings and the embodiments shown, but this sentence specifically says it may be modified in this other way. Why don't we move on really quickly to the doctrine of equivalence, because the one problem I have is, even if you are correct in your claim construction, I'm finding it difficult to conclude there could be no doctrine of equivalent infringement between this and this. I mean, it's just a joint that joins these things. I don't see why there couldn't be doctrine of equivalence infringement. So I found that part of the district court's opinion kind of difficult to understand. So why don't you explain why the district court held summary judgment of no doctrine of equivalent infringement.
And again, it's fact, and they've got Dr. Rosenblatt and Herb Diallo extensively testifying that there's plenty of factual issues.
But we do need to look at what they actually said in their reports. So if you look at the structure that the court has in front of it, what the plaintiff identified as the equivalent of the tube joint is a bite guard. It is a cylindrical insert that is on the inside of the device. It does not abut any part of the exterior surface of the cuff.
Let me make sure I understand something, because I thought basically you've got a potentially three-piece device, three, maybe four if you want to consider this joint something separate, and here you just have basically this molded piece, which maybe is one piece, doing the job of two pieces here.
Correct, Your Honor.
The one piece does the job of two, and under our case law and the doctrine of equivalence, our case law seems to allow for that possibility. That's why I'm...
Okay, but what we're supposed to be looking at is not the devices as a whole. We're supposed to be looking at the individual elements. The individual element is the tube joint, which the district...
Actually, the individual element's the back plate.
The back plate, which the district...
And where's the tube joint in the claim? It's the element of the claim that we look at, right?
It is the element of the claim. I apologize, Your Honor, I misspoke. It's the back plate, which the district court held included the tube joint. If you look at the green AMBU device in front of you, towards the airway end of the device is a reinforcement that prevents the device from kinking when it's in the patient's mouth. It is at the other end of the device than all the other features that the court referenced. It's back here in the kind of shaded region.
But why do you? Why do they have... I don't understand why one molded piece can't replace the tube joint. Doctrine of equivalence purposes.
Okay, but what we have to do is look at what they specifically argued, which was not the entire device. What they specifically argued
was
the bite guard.
I thought they argued this.
They have two arguments. They have a bite guard argument, and they have an extension of the mask argument.
Right.
With regard to the bite guard argument, which is where I started,
You have 16 seconds left, or actually your time's expired. So why don't you go to the one that I keep asking about instead of the one you want to talk about? It's the molded airway tube, please.
Yes, Your Honor. The court concluded that there was no equivalence because of the absence of a tube joint. If the court wants to revisit that on a different basis, we would submit that if you look at the analysis of Dr. Rosenblatt on the doctrine of equivalence, that Dr. Rosenblatt does not compare the specific aspect of the passage when he makes his conclusions on doctrine of equivalence.
Thank you, Ms. Merrill.
The entire device.
Thank you. Mr. Marsden, you have a little over 2 minutes remaining.
Correcting my, or clarifying my answer about what the positions were below, backplate was contended by both parties as a word known to someone skilled in the art. And secondly, and that's at page 5 of the LMA reply brief, and Andrew's position is at joint appendix page 788.
Yeah, but that's not really fair. You're mischaracterizing them. They said in light of the specification that one of skill in the art would understand what the meaning of backplate is. They didn't say it has an ordinary and plain meaning, and here's what the plain meaning is, somehow divorced from the specification.
You're going a little too far.
Yeah,
our position really is the claim doesn't have it.
The prosecution history doesn't have it.
Okay, and the second thing I wanted to provide was just a citation to JA 2735, which makes the point that this is a paragraph 9 of the Herb-Dallow expert report, which explains that, the decision to manufacture a disposable plastic device, such as a disposable laryngeal mask airway, by assembling several separate pieces versus integrally molding a device in one piece, is strictly a design choice and an economic choice based on manufacturing considerations. And unless the court has any other questions, I'll see the remainder of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Marsden.